This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
And it's a pleasure to see everybody at today's conference, and thank you very much indeed for supporting Dog Guide Handlers Australia and on our first conference. I'm delighted to say that today I have a panel of guest speakers, one of whom is Jen Moon, another Nadia Matiazzo, and also Sean Tyrrell. And well, instead of me waffling on, I suppose if I introduce each of them and they can just give you a bit of an introduction as to, you know, who they are, what they do, where they are, and so forth. And then we'll start talking about the actual topics that we're discussing. So first of all, if I could introduce to Jen Moon. Welcome to Dog Guide Handlers, Jen.
Thanks, John. It is lovely to be invited. I think the last time I encountered the group was actually in Sydney. That's where I am right now. So I work for Guide Dogs New South Wales ACT, and I'm the principal advisor with access and stakeholder engagement. So stakeholder engagement is very much dealing with industry and dealing with industry to upskill them to make sure they know what to do when they encounter somebody who's blind or has low vision, and definitely in the areas to ensure that you're not encountering refusals. Obviously, that's still a work in progress. Thanks, John.
Thanks so much indeed, Jen. And now, if I could ask, an old friend, Nadia, well, not an old as in old, but a friend that I've known for quite some time, Nadia Matiazzo. So, to introduce herself, and welcome to you, Nadia.
Thanks, John, and I'm definitely an old friend. So my name is Nadia. I have been... I guess I was one of the founding members of Dog Guide Handlers Australia. That's really scary. I'm currently using my third seeing eye dog, Olympia, who is 8. And I've pretty much worked in the advocacy field for since probably 1992. But as an individual advocate, I've been an advocate all my life, I guess, and I'm now currently Deputy Chief Executive Officer of Women with Disabilities Victoria, working as in the which is a representative organisation for women with disabilities in Victoria. Thanks for asking me to be part of this panel.
Thanks so much indeed, Nadia. And now I'd like to welcome Sean Tyrrell, who has some experience with a dog guide. Welcome to you, Sean.
Thanks, John. Hello all. I'm Sean Tyrrell. I'm also in Melbourne. And I've had my first dog guide, Cayman, for about 10 months now. So he's 2. And I work with the Victorian Government. I'm Assistant Director Forestry and Game, so logging and hunting, like Nadia, I've had an involvement in that because that probably goes back to the 1990s as well.
Thank you so much indeed, Sean. Now, I suppose the things that we're mainly looking at today are things like legislation, which sort of governs dog guide accessibility to places and public transport vehicles, service providers, things like that. We're also looking at ways in which you can feel a bit more confident if you experience refusal of admission or refusal of providing, for example, taxi or rideshare service. People who may be look down at you for their own, you know, own reasons because you have a dog guide and because they tend to have a superiority complex or something. So I'd like to start perhaps with Jen, if you can give me a bit of background and you know, there's no rush, so just in your own time to give a bit of background of your experiences with dog guides, the challenges that they can present, and maybe if you've got ideas as to how to you've handled any unpleasant situations that you've had, please.
Certainly, thanks, John. And just to recap for everybody, I don't have a guide dog. I do have vision, but working for guide dogs over the many years that I've been doing, the role has been about trying to improve awareness in the community of people using dog guides. So that's probably where I'm coming from, is that education angle. So both for, I guess, for the person with the dog guide and also the industry or services that you're trying to receive. So I guess since last time, just to recap, certainly Guide Dogs New South Wales ACT, we have a really strong in delivering what we call industry training. And I'm actually seeing online that there's some of our guide dog speakers. Unfortunately, COVID put a lot of stop to our face-to-face training, which is a little unfortunate, because that's one thing that I will be highlighting right now. There's one thing about raising the awareness in the community of what your rights are. There's another thing about changing behaviour of the service providers. And I think that's what we really need. That's what we're aiming for people to understand why you need to have your dog with you, but also then the legislation that's around that, the fact that you do have rights to go to all public places. So one thing I will highlight is working with industry and how important that is in order to change behaviour. So way back in 2010, we did quite a comprehensive research study with clients, both with guide dogs or with long canes, and certainly in the area of taxis. And I know that taxis and rideshare is a real area of discrimination. That in New South Wales, we had 40% of our guide dog handlers saying that they were experiencing discrimination. 5 years later, after we were then conducting monthly training sessions with all taxi providers, which was mandated under New South Wales law, we saw a drop of that discrimination to 21%. So we could say that, you know, by interacting with industry, industry was responding. At the same time in 2015, within Victoria, when clients were, surveyed there, they were experiencing 46% discrimination within the taxi industry. So again, I think it really highlights that if you work with industry, you do get better results. Now, the downside of that is that we were getting really good responses until when, certainly in New South Wales, they deregulated the taxi industry and in came rideshare. And then all of a sudden, training was not compulsory, training was not mandated. We were actually due to do the 2020 survey, which I would be incredibly interested to know just how this is all playing out with discrimination. But unfortunately, COVID has knocked that back and we haven't done that yet, but we do plan to do that very soon. In the meantime, 1-3 CABS took up training. We were doing training every 2 weeks where we go in and in front of the drivers, we would have somebody with their guide dog explaining why it's so important to have a guide dog, what that guide dog does for them to get out and about, and the role of the driver of how crucial. And you can see behaviour change there and then, which is quite fabulous. Again, unfortunately, due to COVID, they've now stopped the face-to-face training. They've now created a national video. So across Australia, there is now a 4-minute video that hopefully will change driver behaviour. But at the same time, we're also surveying that with our clients to see whether a 4-minute video does in fact change behaviour. Hopefully it does, but definitely that's an area. The other one is Uber. The issues there, we need to look at their training material. I don't know how widely known this is, but when I looked at one of their training pieces of collateral, they had the guide dog sitting on the back seat. And I was quite horrified when I saw this on video as a training video. And it might explain why some drivers don't want to take a guide dog, because they don't want it sitting on the back seat. And of course, that's not where it should be sitting anyway. And the other thing that I'll just quickly highlight is that Guide Dogs Australia did do a campaign earlier this year called access all areas. It was more of a social media campaign. Again, it had, I guess, a lot of interest from the community to raise awareness. But did it change behaviour? I guess we're waiting to see that one. So as for what can people with dog guides do, definitely always report your issue. Report it back to the provider, and then you know that you have other avenues, whether it comes back to your guide dog provider or your dog guide provider, but you also have Blind Citizens Australia to assist, and ultimately you have human rights, which we hope never escalates that far, but we know that it does occur. So I'll leave it there and happy to answer any questions a bit later on.
Thank you so much indeed, Jen. That was an absolutely fascinating and informative insight from the point of view of a person involved in the training of our partners or dogs that are going to help us to be independent and safe in the future. Now, I suppose looking at personal experience is something that's very important. And so what I would like to do is to perhaps ask Sean if you'd like to speak to us about your journey, that is your experience with how long you've had a dog for, and you know, a bit about your dog guide, and also then to talk about things that have been of concern to you since you've had your dog, please.
Well, early on, as I said, I've been a dog guide user for about 9 or 10 months. And relatively early on, I did have an experience of a refusal. It was strange, really. I mean, I had, you know, heard of these things happening for a long time, for decades, but yeah, nonetheless, when it happened to me, I was, you know, really surprised by how deeply upsetting I found it and how much it damaged my confidence. So what had happened, I live nearish to the Queen Victoria Market in Melbourne. I've been going there and doing my shopping once a week for years and years and years. I think since I moved back to Melbourne from Sydney in 2013. And, you know, I like going there. I know a lot of the traders and other people that shop there. But I was there one day. It was the second time I'd been in there with Cayman. And I was just in the meat hall and a couple of security guards came up to me and said, oh, you know, can't have a, you know, animal in here. And I tried to correct them and saying, well, actually, this is a guide dog. You can't tell me, you know, not to bring them in here. And they kind of, you know, stuck to their guns, said, no, you can't be in here with a dog. You're going to have to leave. And, yeah, I did feel, you know, quite upset. So I just, you know, simply told them to, you know, and apologies for language. I did just tell them to, you know, to piss off, and turn around to the butcher and complete my transaction and then walk into a different bit of the market. Now, as soon as I went around the corner, I was approached by two different security guards who also came up to me and said the same thing. And, you know, shortly I started to argue and, you know, within seconds the two had gone to five and who knows what might have happened. But then one of the more senior security guards, who I think, you know, knew me and knew the law, intervened and de-escalated the whole situation and told the others, oh, he's fine, he's allowed to be here with the guide dog, you know, go away. And then he apologised to me, you know, immediately. And so I completed my shop, I went home, I was, you know, I was really upset. And I called the market to complain, and the first person I got on the phone said, oh, no, that is right. You're not allowed to bring a guide dog into the food areas of the Queen Victoria Market. And so when I'd done the training, I, of course, knew that all of that, you know, was wrong. You know, as a person with a disability, I have protection of law not to be treated less favourably when accessing goods and services. So they can't, you know, tell me I can't, you know, can't come in if it's my choice to use a dog guide to facilitate that. So I got another call, you know, a bit later on from someone more senior at the market who kind of, you know, again apologised and promised to deliver training to the people on the call centre and the security guards. And that was sort of where I thought I would leave it. But then I went back to the market a week later and exactly the same thing happened again. I was doing my shop and some security guys came up and said, we can't be in here with an animal. And so I went back to the market, complained again. This time I said, look, you're going to have to do more than an apology. You're going to have to, you know, provide a firm commitment around training and you're going to have to pay some compensation. And they at that point said, well, no, we've apologised. We've, you know, that's all we're going to do. Well, we want to leave it there. And so I did, you know, do that thing that yeah, Guide Dogs Australia says quite rightly they hope that none of us ever have to do and take the market through the Australian Human Rights Commission. And I broadened it a bit at that point. I made the respondents not just the market but also the City of Melbourne, who owned Queen Victoria Market, and I found out who the individual security company was, and I listed all three as respondents to the complaint. And we did a teleconference, and of course, you know, they were more than happy at that point then to apologise, to agree comprehensively to retrain security guards and to the confidential amount of compensation. So yeah, going through that process, you know, it gave me lots of opportunities to really work through my own kind of, you know, feelings of how upset I was, and it really helped me to say that to the people responsible over and over again, and to also, you know, to put it on them, to put some value on that and on that as well, by means of compensating me and demonstrating that they'd put, you know, our systems in place in training so that this did not happen again. And it hasn't. I've been, you know, happily shopping at the Queen Victoria Market once a week for a long time. I also had a kicking good party with the proceeds of the compensation, which came in the form of a voucher. But yeah, I had a lot of my friends over for a fairly lavish go at lots of crayfish and other type things that they sell there. So it all ended well, you know, the market's better off, and I've had a thorough testing of what I've learned in my guide dog training. But yeah, the extent to which it upset me and temporarily affected my confidence to, you know, get in taxis, you know, with a dog to go back to the market, I really had to will myself to keep doing that. It's not something I think our community, you know, should take, you know, lightly. And so, yeah, but, you know, from my own point of view, if it does happen, certainly follow, you know, all the steps that we've talked about today.
Thank you so much indeed, Sean. And I suppose it would have, like, left a lasting sort of sensation that you may not have been aware would sort of be would have been present, you know, when that refusal came. It would have been something that would have really unsettled you or confused or made you a bit uneasy because of, you know, you're just carrying out your normal daily life, and to be confronted by that sort of attitude or opinion would have been something that would have sort of stopped you in your tracks a bit, would it?
It did, yeah. And I was surprised, you know, how much, like, I spent, I think after the second weekend where it happened, I just brooded at home about it. I look back on the tone of the emails I sent to senior people at the market about it, and they were, you know, they were filthy. And even now, months later, you know, a few weeks ago, I was approached by another security guard, and this time he did something I think that they're, you know, entitled to do under Australian law, rightly or wrongly, which was simply to ask me, "Is that a guide dog?" And I said yes, and the guy was satisfied and let me get on with my business. But yeah, you know, as he approached me, I could, you know, feel my heart begin to pound, type thing. There were nice things, you know, too, on the other side of it. I didn't realise at the time, but on the first weekend when it happened, the traders that it happened in front of, the people that are selling who know me, they also, you know, lodged complaints, you know, with the market and backed up, you know, my version of events. And that was really telling in being able to, you know, very quickly overpower the three respondents when we were in the Human Rights Commission and bring them, basically to my opening bid in the settlement negotiation. So it was nice that, you know, there are, you know, people, and I'm sure this is true in, you know, taxi companies and even Uber, plenty of people who, you know, understand our, you know, our right and our need to work with assistance dogs and are willing to stand up for it as well.
Yes, and I suppose also, you know, in general day-to-day life, you'd get, as well as, you know, having that unpleasant sort of memory, the pleasant one of people admiring the type of skill and ability that both you and your dog guide has would also give you a bit of a confidence lift, you know, because you'd no doubt get some comments now and then about how your dog looks or is working, would you?
Yeah, I do. But I mean, for me, that kind of affirmation is nice, but it's simply the experience of working with the dog. With I've got RP, classic progressive vision loss, and so I was finding with the cane, I was walking into tree branches and just missing things. When it was starting to affect my confidence. I mean, the simple act of going for a long walk with Cayman, was really the best, affirmation of confidence that I can get, because he's one of those, dogs that flies along. And so being able to go, so safely and so quickly around my business, someone once told me the guide dog is to the white cane as the Rolls Royce is to the Combi, and I was skeptical about that at the time. But, my experience with Cayman is that it's turned out to be true. Admittedly, a Rolls Royce that's hungry all the time, where you have to tend to those distraction food things. Just being with your dog is I find the balm to bring you back from when you do have really nasty experiences with refusals.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Sean, and we'll have some questions no doubt shortly for you, but now I'd like to again welcome Nadia, and who's got no doubt a wealth of experience with both advocacy, with dealing with refusals, how to sort of do it without getting into into an anxious or depressed state, and tips and things that we can do to both safeguard our dog guides as well as our own, mental health. And thank you again, Nadia.
John, just to clarify, we're almost at 1 o'clock. How long do you want me to talk for? Because if you don't give me a time, I may just continue for longer than you need.
I think that these are important topics, and I'll while you're talking, I'll confer, but I would say if we go for 5 to 10 minutes, because this is important, we may be able to we've had to just do a little bit of rearranging behind the scenes, so if we can plan for, say, for example, 10 minutes, and then we'll do a few questions. I'll just confirm whether that's appropriate, and if it isn't, I'll come back, but if we can plan that way.
Yeah,
thanks,
sorry,
John.
Sorry, Nadia, it's Kevin. John, that's fine, absolutely fine. That's good. 10 minutes and then 5 minutes for questions, and we'll just extend the lunch for an extra 15 minutes. That's all fine.
That's great. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. So to respond to Jen's comments about 2014 in Victoria, I am probably a prime example of that instance where in 2014 I got my third seeing eye dog, and she's probably the most docile of the three that I've had, but she has caused me the most problems in terms of refusals. And it's not really her fault, but it was a real eye-opener, I guess, in terms of being refused access to taxis and cafes and other venues. Before 2014, I had two previous dogs, and I really hadn't experienced refusal maybe once in 8 or 9 years. So by the time I got to Olympia, and within 6 months I had 9 taxi refusals, which was And I'm wondering how many people are nodding their heads saying, yep, I've had that many, because at that stage of the taxi training, I think, experience, it had markedly unimproved, not a good word, but you know what I mean. And the refusal rate was ridiculous. I had, I guess, the best case scenario where I had a refusal was that I actually got to sit my bum on the seat of a taxi and talked the taxi driver around to taking myself and my dog, because A, I needed to get somewhere, and I needed to get there. I was already running late. So we did a bit of advocacy, and I said, look, if you like, she normally sits in the front with me in the footwell. That's where they're trained to sit. But if you really are afraid of the dog. I can sit in the back and she can sit on the floor beside me in the back, and he was fine with that. And in the end, he said to me, if you ever need another taxi, here's my mobile number, you can call me. So we went from one kind of extreme to the other. And if you have the time, that's great. If you don't have the time, if you're having a bad day, if you're stressed, if you're tired, you do not have the time to pull someone through that kind of advocacy space with you, and you just want to get from A to B, just like everybody else does. You don't want to have to explain that you have a dog, that she's not going to eat you, that she has had breakfast this morning, that she's not trained to eat humans or anything like that, that she couldn't care less about you, she's caring about me, all of those kind of things. And the worst refusal I had in taxis was someone who actually drove off on me while I had my hand on the door of the car and absolutely refused to take my dog. And whilst I was on the phone to the taxi company, he was on the phone to base, and he said, "She's got a dog." Didn't say what kind of dog it was. Olympia had her harness on. For seeing eye dogs, we have a sign on our harness, on the handle, saying, please do not touch on working, something to that effect in those days. You know, it was obvious. He drove off while I was holding the door, trying to get in, because I figure if you get in, that's half the better one. That one went to the Victorian Taxi Commission as a complaint. About 6 months later, he had been spoken to, refuted everything, of course, and said, no, I didn't see that the dog had a harness. It was just a black dog. All the things that I'm sure a lot of members have heard before. And I then had to go into the Taxi Commission to make a statement, a signed statement, because the case was going to go to court. I don't know whether it went to court. I have not had any follow-up since 2017 when this all blew up. But I'm presuming they either settled or they did go to court and I wasn't needed to testify, because they were saying that I may have to have gone to testify. So it's a really... advocacy can be anything from talking someone around, from explaining someone the situation, to, as Sean said, lodging a DDA complaint, from in terms of a taxi complaint, going to the Victorian Taxi Commission in Victoria. The other refusals that I've experienced, just quickly, include a restaurant. That refused myself and another friend. We both had seeing eye dogs. One of the staff refused us. In that instance, what I did was I used social media. It's always a good thing if you use it wisely. And I put up a post on the restaurant's website and said, look, this is what happened to me today. I tried to explain that my dog is a working seeing eye dog. The staff member refused on three separate occasions when I tried to explain, and so we left and we went to the restaurant next door and we had a really good time. And it just so happened that a friend of mine picked that post up, and of course I shared it to my Facebook page. A friend of mine picked up that post. She knows someone who works in the radio industry. They did an interview, and then it kind of ballooned out a little bit from there, and I had Channel 7 News do a story. They interviewed staff from Seeing Eye Dogs, and the staff member was a new staff member, had not been trained appropriately, and I guess myself and someone else who is on this group, who I won't name at the moment, but she's here, in compensation, they shouted us, myself and maybe five or six other people, and we had... three or four dogs between us all, and we all went and got a free meal, and that was really nice. And I've been back to the restaurant ever since, and they've been really welcoming. The final refusal that I want to quickly talk about is the first dog lover show in Melbourne that we had. I can't remember the year, Both Seeing Eye Dogs and Guide Dogs Victoria, then who were then Guide Dogs Victoria, had stands at the Dog Lover Show, and I was actually refused access with my guide dog because they didn't know that she was a Seeing Eye Dog. There were also other people, obviously breeders and things, that were taking their dogs in, their breeding dogs in, because it's a public event. But I was challenged. In that instance, I understood it was probably lack of training of the guards, of the security guards. I tried to discuss the issue with them, and in the end, I just walked straight through, and they didn't stop me. And then they challenged me a second time on the same day, and I said, "We've had this story before. She's a working Seeing Eye dog. Go and talk to your manager." And again, I just walked straight through. So I guess it's just in terms of what you do and how you respond to people who challenge you, it's all stems down to really the way you're feeling on the day. It also stems down to what your confidence level is. You know, often first-time dog handlers might have a little bit less confidence than if you've had more than one dog. Sometimes not. But it's just all about how you want to react to the situation. What I would probably really say is try and diffuse the situation. If that doesn't work, then I think the more support you get around where it's happening, like when I was refused access at the Dog Lover Show, I had friends with me. Then there were other people who were behind those friends who said, "It's a working Seeing Eye dog, they're allowed in." So I let them kind of deal with it. I just kept on walking, which is a bit selfish of me, but I thought, well, you know, I've tried to explain. There are other people in the queue supporting my my premise. If you can't understand that, then, you know, you need more training, and I'm just going to do what I need to do here. If you need support, there are organisations, as has been said, like Blind Citizens Australia, also Dog Guide Handlers Australia. That's what, as a founding member, that's one of the big things that we were really keen to support. And obviously your dog guide organisation, whether it's Guide Dogs Australia, whether it's Seeing Eye Dogs, whether it's Staple, whether it's the trainer that you're working with, Forward Thinking, Anna, whoever, go back to your own organisation and seek support from them. Thanks, John.
Thank you so much indeed for that, Nadia. That's a great insight as to some of your experience and some of the challenges that you've had to deal with. Now, so that we don't keep everyone from their lunch, either the humans or the dogs, I would see if anyone would like to ask any questions. If you've got anyone there, Erica?
It's really just been comments. People are suggesting that you could read Dale Carnegie's book on how to influence people.
Yes.
Other people are saying it's very frustrating that dog guide refusals still occur even today in 2021. And that's from someone who's onto their fifth guide dog. So that person would have experienced quite a number of refusals. But, yeah, generally I think a lot of it's been covered by the three speakers today. However, Stacey's got her hand up, so she can unmute herself and ask her own question.
Welcome, Stacey.
Thank you. It's more of a comment that possibly will lead into a question. I don't use public transport for issues with, not prior to my dog. I've stopped using public transport because I've had issues with, you know, buses not stopping and that kind of thing. So I haven't had refusals with public transport, but I'm more interested in the fact if Guide Dogs Australia and Vision Australia would potentially get together and do a collaboration on like a national push to education in more of a, like maybe in schools, to avoid having to deal with access issues. Like, is that something that could be considered
Yeah, and I suppose you've also got to look there at whether you involve government in that, because
absolutely,
you've got a limited amount of power, you know, between those organisations. You know, you'd really have to get a working relationship between every dog guide agency or school, yes, and then also with backing it with government legislation. Would that be right?
Yeah, but I think like a national push, like International Guide Dog Day, the other month, I suggested something along the lines of a Healthy Harold type system for working dogs and assistance dogs in general, to get into the schools, educate people, because I find that it's not necessarily the store clerks that I've had issues with, because they know all the rules, they know they're allowed in and that kind of thing. It's more the security guards and the taxis that I've heard. You know, there just needs to be something to avoid these issues, and not on social media. Like, I saw the guide dog push on social media, but I only saw them because I was looking through the page. That I didn't know that it was going on at the time. So not everyone uses social media. There needs to be like a national mainstream education system.
Is it okay if I just jump in? It's Jen from Guide Dogs. Thank you, Stacey. I so agree. The more we can push the message out. But unfortunately, we do come across, I guess, institutionalised issues. So for the schools, we had a very strong school program up until a couple of years ago. But school curriculum gets tighter and tighter, and unless we get the schools open to take on the messaging, that is difficult. I so agree with John that it really does come down to, you need to have from above making sure this happens. So the classic was the taxi industry. Once that got deregulated and there's no longer mandated training, and I say this from New South Wales, but I believe in Queensland it is mandated. So again, we have so many different legislations occurring around the different states of Australia, and certainly with Guide Dogs Australia, we can come together, I guess, from our perspective of a joint collaborated or education. But again, it does come back down to the governments enforcing. You are the best advocates, as you know, to change behaviour. But as you all know, yes, depending on how you're feeling, how many times it's happened, why does the onus always fall back onto you to change the behaviour of what people should already know? So again, I just feel like there's got to be a stronger impetus for when someone does refuse you, that there's stronger ramifications for doing the wrong thing.
Jen, yes. If I could just jump in, and John, sorry. I would totally agree. And the biggest, as Jen said, the big thing in Australia is the inconsistency in legislation. Queensland has some really good, what I think is some really good legislation. The DDA is how many years out? So it needs to be consistently applied, and there needs to be, whether it's fines or something, and they need to be implemented if it happens, if it's severe enough, or if it's, well, I guess any refusal for a person, depending, again, as Jen said, on how your day is doing and all of that, can affect you quite, can have a quite quite an extensive impact on you. So I think there needs to be more teeth to the legislation, the consistent legislation that needs to be adopted across Australia.
Thank you very much.
I have to wind up now, John.
Yes, sure. I'd just like to thank everybody. And I think one thought to leave everyone with, a bit of thinking thing, is to just ask people to consider what main step or initial step we could take to bring attention to the Australian public. So not just the blindness sector, but to all Australians, how do we start the movement to public awareness, so that A, we get the right penalties for the sort of people who are going to show discrimination, but then also how we actually educate people about that, because, you know, if 50% of the taxi drivers aren't aware of the penalties or aren't aware of the law or choose to be like ostriches and have their head in the sand, then, you know, it's going to have limited success anyway. But I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you so much indeed, Jen, to Nadia and to Sean, all of you as my guest panel members today. Thank you for such a an interesting and informative session.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?